Well, there was a lot of panic when people saw that Saint Don Quixote was on the same Sunday as Buddhism, because they would seem to go together about as well as oil and the Gulf of Mexico. I hope to show you that that is not the case, and I'm happy to, for the newcomers here, whether this is your first time or second or third, to understand that we're not always attacking Brand X. Sometimes we look at other faiths, actually we look at all other faiths, to find those things that can nourish us. We are cafeteria people. When other religions say, we're not a cafeteria, you can't pick and choose what you want, our faith says, pick and choose what you want, what nourishes you from whatever tradition you find it, whether Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Buddhist or humanist or earth-based or sky-clad. That's an inside joke. We'll see if any of you get it. That was a Wiccan euphemism for naked. However you find your spiritual nourishment, what is important is what we do with it. That's the critical thing for Unitarian Universalists. Don Quixote. Well, to most Americans, Don Quixote is known from the great Broadway musical. And that's fair enough. And what most people understand about Don Quixote is that he dreamed an impossible dream. And that's fair enough, and I'll come back to that. What we tend to forget with that image of Don Quixote jousting against windmills, believing that they are giants, turning a woman of, for that time, questionable virtue into a virgin, seeing his sidekick, who was somewhat doddering and tottering, as a noble squire, he was somewhat mad and delusional. And what we often forget is that at the end of the actual book, the second book of Cervantes' great novel, really foundational novel, Don Quixote loses his madness. He is stripped of his illusions and delusions, and he becomes normal and dies broken and brokenhearted. I liked him better slightly mad. I liked him better as I would like myself better, chasing impossible dreams, jousting against windmills, not calculating the oxymoron of the common wisdom. Don Quixote was a great figure, and I put the word saint to him, because he did what he saw he was to do without political calculation, without being tied to the common and conventional wisdom, without dealing with the possible, but dealing with the true. That's powerful stuff in a complicated world where we often start out with our first position being to give up our ideals and to do the easy thing, the popular thing, the possible thing. Don Quixote does not do this. Like other saints, he is dealing with something that is inside, something that is for him true, a sense of idealism and of hope that gives meaning to his life and means to change the world for the better. Now, I'm not arguing any kind of romanticizing of mental illness. I don't accept that. Mental illness can often be a tragedy. I don't go with that old cliched trope that if only the sane people are really insane and the insane people are really sane. We understand that there are ways of being out of balance and disconnected sufficiently that we can't achieve reasonable, practical, and more importantly, good goals for our world and for our life. But caution and the politically possible can stop us, from being involved in life, can stop us from making a commitment, because it just isn't possible to live a life of integrity. It isn't possible to act out our values. It isn't possible to separate our desires from our actions and our desires for outcome. And here's where the Buddhism comes in and where I think that they fit. In Buddhism, you don't deal so much with the outcome. You deal with the integrity. You deal with being mindful of our best selves and our best values. You do the right thing, not because you know it's going to work, not because you believe that it is going to be popular, but because you believe it is an intrinsic connection of your values, of our values, with what we do in the world. You feed someone, they're going to be hungry again. You haven't solved the problem of hunger, but you have done one thing right. You work to try to save the planet, to have a greener world, a safer world for our children and grandchildren tomorrow. There is no guarantee that humankind is going to come to its senses and make the changes necessary within our lifetime. There is no guarantee that our sacrifices of time, of talent, of treasure, of wattage and kilowatts are going to make a decisive difference. But the fact that it might not work and that it might not make a difference does not give us permission to recuse ourselves from life, to recuse ourselves from our visions, from our dreams. Our calculation of, oh, I can't do anything, the world's too big, doesn't let us, in good faith, slip into cynicism and passivity and let tomorrow be written by somebody else. We are called upon, across a religious and political spectrum, to examine ourselves, to be mindful of what is important to us, and to act on it. Of course, we have to compromise in the real world. I'm not preaching that we should never compromise our values, never make accommodations with others, but just stubbornly pursue and to hell with what anybody else says. Of course not. But so often, we start from the position of compromise. We start from the position of, it's not possible, so why bother? It's just going to fail anyway. Why should I give my heart out there to be broken? And the Buddhist position is, give your heart, and it may be broken, but that's okay. Because in the real time, in the real light, in the real life that we share together right now, that's what our lives are about. They are not validated by our success. They are validated by our actions and our actions being congruent with our values. Will we have different values in this room? Oh, you bet. Will we have different aesthetics in this room? Yeah, I was arguing, as Unitarians do, with the first verse of the first hymn. Love the second verse. You can go back and read it after the sermon. Not now. Don't open your hymnals now, or your souls will be in peril. Put it down, Patrick. The first verse I have problems with, because you know something? I don't want to be that peaceful and tranquil. I remember, perhaps imperfectly, the first benediction I ever wrote. It was in 1969 for my first congregation, and my mentor, John Evans, the minister of Star King Unitarian Church in, I'm sure it was somewhere up there, in Hayward, said, write a benediction. I said, what? Yeah. Benny, okay, I got that good diction. I'll try to pronounce it, tripping me upon the tongue. And the benediction that I wrote was, do not adjust. In a world where there is starvation, and farmers are paid not to produce, do not adjust. In a world where war is normal and peace may be seen as treason, do not adjust. In a world that still judges people by the melanin content of their skin and not their character, do not adjust. In a world where money makes power, and power makes might, and might makes right, do not adjust. We have these blurry lines to walk, where rage against the machine is not an answer, but nor is passivity and acceptance. That accepting the status quo and saying I can do nothing is not an answer, but neither is monomaniacal focus on one thing to the exclusion of all others. Leading an examined life in a real world is not easy. We are always making accommodations. We are always trying to measure our motivation and regulate it by some sense of the possible. But there are key things that almost every human being holds in our hearts. And they may be different. But those key things we are called upon to put into our lives, in our actions, in our meditations, in how we engage the world. We will model to each other and to the future what is important to us by what we do and how we are. It's by action as well as by attitude. Are we always angry? Are we always sad? Are we always cynical? Or are we, as human beings, buffeted around but with a center that we know? And a center that we have examined. As I look at the great faiths of the world, I see common threads in the saints of Christianity, in the Kaddishim of the Jewish tradition, in the Mahabhas of the Muslim tradition, in the Gurus of the Hindu tradition, and the Buddhas, plural, of the Buddhist tradition. It is consciousness, it is mindfulness, it is trying to live as best we can according to our visions. Some of our visions may not be practical, but that's okay. The great things are seldom achieved by the practical, or let me turn it around, are often achieved by the impractical. This morning at about 4:20 a.m., as I was listening to BBC, which all the men of my age will understand why I was up at 4:20 listening to the BBC, there was a management guru on, and he said, he was talking about the great young corporations and what kind of difference they were making, what they had in common. And what he was talking about is these young leaders in these young corporations didn't know that what they were trying to do wasn't possible. And so they did it. I don't know that peace is possible. Either peace in the world or peace in our community or peace in our hearts. I know that I'm called upon to work for it, to fight for it. And I'll use fight in a very specific way next week when I talk about peace. I know that for my life to be meaningful, I have to at least attempt to live examined values, and that meaning of my life will not be made by the achievement or non-achievement of those values. Achievement is nice, but I want to point out that when we look at the great figures of other religions and of our own, perhaps our own religions, that the Buddha never raised an army and never led a nation. Jesus never raised an army, never led a nation and overthrew the Roman Empire through ideas and through values. that Moses, the lawgiver, never lived to enter the promised land. That Gandhi never governed India and, of course, never raised an army. And that Rosa Parks simply sat down and would not stand for injustice. What do they have in common? They simply lived. And they lived simply according to their visions and their values. They had impossible dreams. And I think that Buddha and Don Quixote would understand them perfectly.